I'm just a real big Meepits fan. Welcome to episode 43 of There Is No Offseason, a podcast from Baseball Prospectus focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley, and I am joined by BP's fantasy manager and secret interior decorating enthusiast, Brett Sayer, and my fellow authors, a man who is now forced to place sarcastic remarks in italics on GChat, Mauricio Rubio, and someone who I know is just as tired of writing about starting pitching prospects as I am, Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. Say hi to everyone and tell them where they can find you on the interwebs. And Brett, we'll start with you.
Brett, turn off your mute.
I bet
God damn it.
See, at the intro, when I tell people where to find you, then you tell them with your voice.
Yeah, I'm going to do it now. Is it okay? Can I do that?
Sure.
You can find me at baseballprospectus.com and thedynastyguru.com and on Twitter at dynastyguru. Mal?
You can find me unmuted at baseballprospectus.com. You can also find me unmuted at mrubio52. Craig?
You can find me at Baseball Prospectus and at thedynastyguru, and you can find me on Twitter at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in commenter, disparager, Goldstein. Ben?
Craig, I don't even know what to say to you right now. That was my CD for the end of Tino. that exact CD was my CD for the outro.
If it's not clear, we do not coordinate those at all.
So we got Brett on mute and Craig stealing the CD. Good start.
Yep. I'm just like in shock.
I am like the boyfriend you broke up with and never talked to again. I stole your CDs.
Wow, we're getting really weird. Getting real weird up in here.
I hate you, but that was good. All right.
Where can we find you, Ben?
Oh, excellent. You can also find me at Baseball Prospectus and at the Dynasty Guru, and you can find me at Ben Carsley on Twitter. You can find this podcast on Twitter via the aptly named at Tino Podcast handle, and you can ask us questions and tell us about your feelings by emailing us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. So now that eloquent and very professional introduction is out of the way, we can get into the meat of today's podcast, which will largely consist of us debating Brett Sayer's top 175 fantasy starting pitching dynasty rankings. So that will be very exciting because I think if there's anything the four of us in particular really want to do right now, it's to talk even more about starting pitchers. But before we cross that bridge, we will begin as we begin most of these podcasts, and that's with reader emails. So our first reader email this time around is from Sam. Sam says, "Hey guys, I count down the days from pod to pod, and there's always too many. I also feel strangely guilty for dissing Craig a few weeks ago, but I would feel even guiltier had I not. Enough nonsense. I guess becoming a friend of the podcast is like a ponytail. You can't force it. My question. I just inherited a terrible team. I mean bad. I have Mike Trout, though. It's a 12-keeper, 20-team league with pretty normal categories. I'm fairly certain I can flip him for a combination of 4 to 5 good prospects/players, one or two of the top 100 of the Dynasty Guru top 500, the others in the top 200 plus picks. If I'm keeping 12 of my current players, my keepers are AJ Burnett and John Jay. So would you advise turning Trout into a bunch of players or keeping him? There's not a lot of trade bait here otherwise. A couple of guys in the top 100, but that's really it." So this is a pretty interesting question because I think we've answered, what's a fair deal for Trout in a vacuum before, but I don't think we've talked about the strategy of trading Trout when he's really all you got. So, Craig, why don't you lead us off here? Would you be trading Trout at all? We'll start with that.
No, and it's not even close to me. I think I get the appeal, so I don't think it's like a stupid thought process or anything like that. But to me, when you're talking about one or two players in a top 100 and then a few others in the top 200, that's not nearly enough value. I understand. I'm going to go back to what we've talked about in terms of trading Trout in a vacuum, and that you need another top 10, if not top 5 player coming back the other way. And I would so much rather that than get 4 or 5 guys in the top, 100 to 200 type players. It's the reason is that there are 240 players kept in a 20-team league with 12 keepers. I think you can get someone from like the people left over, and who will jump up into the top 100 range. You're never going to get someone from that range to do what Trout does and have it consolidated. I think you can fill out the other 11 spots in your keeper list more easily than you can replicate that type of production, the type of production that Trout gives. So I don't think this is particularly close, even if it involves keeping John Jay. The team is bad, and it's going to be bad even if you trade Trout, is my guess. And so I'd rather just draft well and improve my keepers like that and have Trout to help my team, or potentially move for like I said, another top 5 guy and maybe another option or two after that. Brett, is that different than what you might do?
Nope. I think that's absolutely right. If you're in a shallow league, you it's a slightly different argument for a really deep league. If you're in a shallow league and you're not getting back at least one player in the top 10-ish overall, it's an auto reject.
Well, to be clear, he's in a 20-team league, so it's not a shallow league. It's just 12
teams. I thought it was 12 teams. Okay, either way. You could make the argument that you could build a Trout trade around many players, including one who's in the top 20. But if you're not, if you're not at least there, then absolutely not. I mean, Trout's what, 23 years old? I mean, you have time to build a team around him without trading him, especially if it's only a 12 keeper league. I mean, You've got time, so don't sweat it. Patience is key, so don't do anything stupid.
Mao, a different take from you, or are you in line here?
Have we ever accepted a Trout trade that has been proposed here? I feel like we haven't. We've gotten quite a few of them. There's been a lot of people out there who've tried to trade.
I think we got one about maybe 9 months ago or so that I thought
was there one
we decided was reasonable.
I think there was one that started with McCutcheon, maybe?
Or with Harper?
I was thinking maybe one with Harper. I think there was one we thought was fine, but I don't think I would do. I don't think I would trade Trout.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I think we ended up being split on a couple of trades. I don't think there's been like a trade where we've been just blown away with it. So I mean, it's all right.
I mean the thing that everyone has to remember is that it gets lost because it. We forget how young he is, but Trout's value in a dynasty league, it's easy. I do all these rankings and, he's at number one, but the difference between him and the number two player is about the difference between the number two player and maybe the number 20 player, 25 player. He's that much better than everybody else. So don't.
And he's not only that much, he's that much better. And he's that much of a better bet. Like, he's so much more secure, right? I mean, yep. Andrew McCutcheon had a phenomenal season last year, but you don't expect him to do that necessarily again, whereas we do expect that with Trout. And he's only 23. Like, it compounds because he's so young, and you can expect that type of production for maybe the next decade.
It just doesn't exist anywhere else. You're absolutely right. I mean, the age, the floor, the ceiling, everything. It does not exist anywhere else.
And the key term that you always want to walk away from whenever you're talking about Mike Trout, especially what he's produced over the first 2 years of his career, is something that Craig kind of touched on a little bit, and that's, that's production consolidation. I mean, you could trade for a couple of different parts and a couple of different players who will provide you pieces of what Mike Trout brings to the table, but you're not going to find outside of the top 5, really, you're not going to find a package that's going to bring everything that Trout brings to the table. So, be more efficient, and that's what Trout is. He's highly efficient, and he's really fucking good.
All right, so that's a consensus. So I'm going to move us on to the next question because it's sort of a nice it's sort of attacking this question from the opposite angle, not necessarily in terms of Trout, but in terms of, you know, trading a surplus for one of the very best players. So this question is from Seth, and Seth says, "Hello, gents. What are your collective thoughts on trading multiple touted prospects for established stars? I joined a dynasty league 3 years ago, 46 men rosters, 5x5, 20 minor leaguers, and took over a terrible roster. Now I have plenty of young names, Buxton, Correa, Bradley, but I feel like I am 1 to 2 stars away from contending. Kershaw just went on the block, and I am offering Correa, Tapia, and Bradley for him. Puig maybe had as well, but it would most likely cost me Polanco and maybe even Buxton. I feel like I should be aggressive in targeting these stars, but I don't want to sell my prospects short. Many thanks, Seth." So, like, let's keep what Brett just said in mind, and, you know, it's not the perfect converse of would you trade these guys for Trout, because the difference between Trout and even a guy like Kershaw or Puig is so vast. But I think this is a pretty interesting concept nonetheless. So, Mal, what say you?
Well, I mean, for the first package that you're sending away for Kershaw, Correa, Tapia, and Bradley, I mean, if you pull that off, many applauses to you, because that's, you know, that's something. If I was going after Kershaw and that's what the ask was, like, that's, I'm sending that pretty quickly. And I love all of those players. You know, maybe not Bradley so much, but, you know, I love Correa and I love Tapia. So it's, you know, that's definitely a trade that I pull off. I think the more interesting one is the Polanco and Buxton for Puig. And even that, like, I'm if you're in a position where you think you're going to be you're 1 or 2 players away, and that's kind of where your competitive window is, and you've already identified that, then yeah, absolutely, that's a trade that I'm pulling. Even if Buxton's in there, because it's, you know, it's aggressive and it hurts. But if, you know, you want to win, right? And Buxton's, you know, he's still a little further away than I think we all think he is. And Puig is, you know, he's here right now and he's producing. So it's, you know, to think about what Brett said and, you know, kind of tying in the other conversation to everything that's going on here, like, if you're in this position where you have assets at the minor league level and you want to put together those assets and, you know, to go try and get stars, I wouldn't really be afraid of it. There are certain trades that you obviously don't want to do. When you're talking about the type of power and the appeal that you're getting with Puig and Kershaw, like, that's, I mean, those are pretty, you know, pretty comfortable yeses for me. Brett, what about you? What do you have to say?
It's pretty simple. You build up a farm system like that in order to get stars to win championships. And it doesn't matter whether the stars are those prospects that you have, you know, nurtured for however long, or they're the guys that you trade them for. I mean, obviously, if you're a contending team, I would do this Kershaw deal, and I really like all three prospects as well. But the one thing to keep in mind is you have to make sure you know where you are. You have to be damn sure that you are 1 to 2 players away from contending. Because if you trade away these prospects and you're wrong, then you may have just cost yourself your window. I mean, it's less of an issue with younger guys. Like, I mean, Kershaw and Puig are not old, but if you're just in generalities, if you are pulling the trigger on trades like this, you got to be confident that you give yourself a real chance. Craig?
I'll just be quick and say nothing really expansive. I'll say the Kershaw deal is really easy for me. That's a yes. The Puig deal, if it's Polanco and Buxton, I don't think I would do that. I actually read it, and maybe I read it wrong, as Polanco and him saying maybe even Buxton being the centerpiece. In which case, I would trade one or the other. He says and, so I don't know that my interpretation was correct. I would do one or the other. I wouldn't do both, and I would do one or the other and add something to get Puig, but I wouldn't do the two of them together. So, Ben, I'm sorry.
No, Craig, you pretty much nailed it for me. So instead of dawdling on and telling you how much I agree, I'll just swiftly move us on to the third reader email. Which is from James. James says, "Hello, fantasy gentlemen. I am in a 12-team auction, 260 salary cap keeper league. We use OBP instead of average. I had a rough year last year and sold off pieces I wouldn't keep and now have the second most draft dollars in the league. We get to keep up to six players with a $100 cap. Salaries escalate 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 16 for each capped year. This leads to uncapped players like Miggy going for $75 and King Felix going for $64. Now that I've bored you with my hopefully not strange format award league, here's my question. I am definitely keeping Trout at 18 and McCutcheon at 40. Should I keep Stanton for 42, using up all of my keeper cap exactly, or keep some combination of Iwakuma at 5, Rizny Castillo at 6, Colton Wong at 6, Manny Machado at 10, JD Martinez at 6, Charlie Blackman at 6, Yordano Ventura at 11, Andrew Cashner at 10. I am leaning toward having three top 10 players and $200 to fill in the rest of my team. Talk me into or out of it. Thank you very much. It's Team Craig, Team Old Bay Americans. So in innovative hashtagging at the end there. Brett, we'll kick it back out to you for yet another Trout question. It's a Trout-centric podcast this time around. Would you be going with the three superstars, or would you be sort of diversifying the risk here?
Nah, I say fuck it. Keep Stanton. It's a 12-team league. You can get guys later. That's too good to pass up to go in with Trout, Kutch, and Stanton, especially in an OBP league. I mean, Stanton is as good as Stanton is in a regular league. He's slightly better in an OBP league. So, Mal?
No, yeah, fuck it. You know, keeps same shit. I mean, Stanton's my boy, so it's pretty hard to turn that down anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I got nothing. Yeah, Craig, you got some bottle shots here? Or?
No, I think the key point here is that it's a 12-team league, and you still get to draft. You know, you still have $200 to play with. There's going to be plenty of value to be had later, so I would also take Stanton. The only thing I'd add is that this is absolutely a strange format. This is a weird fucking format. You can't even pretend. Like, I don't know why you're hoping. This is very weird.
I was going to revisit that. I don't think I was going to let that go the whole time.
Okay. I'm going to let you go then.
We started out so poorly tonight that I thought we'd try to string together like 10 serious minutes before I berated someone for a weird fucking format. But this is the bad format. This is not.
I don't understand this at all.
No.
It's got a very weird salary escalation. And also, I don't understand the idea of capping the like having a separate cap for the players that you keep. That's a weird.
Yeah, me neither. Although, you know what I was thinking about the other week? Mark Normandine's weird. His league is fucking weird. I don't know why. I don't know what we're doing in there.
Yeah, it is.
I don't really know the rules.
It's definitely.
Nobody does.
Mark is the only one who knows the rules.
I just sort of eyeball the roster and I'm like, I won't get laughed at. Submit. That looks good.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, I'm going to send us to our most important question now. Which is from friend of the podcast, Meepits, of course. Meepits says, and I want to talk about the intro to this question too first. Dear Manwich, Boywich, Pig in a Blanket, and Slider. who do we think is what here? I think Brett is Manwich, probably.
Yeah. Hopefully. I mean, he's the adult.
That's what I'm thinking.
I think you're Boywich.
Yeah,
I would, and then I think you're Pig in a Blanket and Mao is Slider, probably.
I think that's accurate. That's where I was going.
Yeah, that's actually, you got it.
No, we have sad lives. All right. Dear Tino, as you know, I recently started a Tino Listeners League and then quickly handed over the reins to Chambers Middlebrook so I don't have to do as much work.
That's an amazing move.
I'm just a real big Meepits fan. I was surprised by how many of these Tino fans immediately stated a preference for head-to-head. I've always played head-to-head, small sample theater, but I assumed I was in the great minority. Obviously, the small sample frowns most profoundly on players with only one or two games a week. Mid to high average hitters seem to have the most bankable weekly performance. But beyond that, what are your thoughts on filling out a roster with head-to-head over Roto in mind? I hope you dance, Meepits. Shit, I didn't even really realize there was a real component to this question. I just wanted to sort of talk about the Tino Listeners League. I think we've earned the right to not answer this. Fuck off, Meepits. No one's answering your real question.
Wait a minute, though. We actually had this question in the bat signal, too.
Then let's super not answer it.
Can we just, I just want to say that I Hope You Dance is the best sign off I've ever seen in my fucking life.
I'm so stealing that at work, and there's no.
All right. You guys have read that poem, right? You guys have read that poem?
The I Hope You Dance poem?
Yeah, you'll find it, and it'll add another layer to this sucker.
I thought it was like a song.
It is a song, yeah, but it's also like, you'll see.
All right. Anyway.
Just one last thing. I want to applaud him for making the subject of the email to us his own name. So it was because he knows we're looking.
He knows we'll read it. Yeah. No, it's good. It's the good email. But anyway, so Meepits and now Chamber Middlebrooks, who I think I am mistakenly
Chambers Middlebrook.
I mistakenly called him
the wrong thing.
Are you good? Or can I speak?
All right. Fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was about to apologize to Chambers for calling him Chandler Middlebrook on Twitter. That is indeed not him. Anyway, Meepits started a Tino Listeners League, which, oddly enough, they are still three people short of because I think only seven people listen to us. So if you actually do enjoy Tino and you'd like to get in on that, get in touch with Meepits at Johnny Meepits at Twitter, or just ask one of us and we'll direct you to him. But before we wrap this up, I just need to read what he tweeted to me earlier. He lets me know out of the blue. In the off season of this league, we are doing a proper nouns draft in competing number of mentions on the pod. So probably your names will go off the board first, then Enya, and I imagine the late rounds will be sandwich types, Edwin Jackson, etc.
That's actually the best idea I've ever
heard in my life. I think it's the funniest thing I've ever seen on Twitter.
If I'm Meepits, I might be drafting myself and then writing in hysterical fucking emails is what I would be doing.
He's had a strong run.
Yeah.
Oh man.
My God.
We're gonna need to get the winner of the Tino League something.
No. We're just gonna have Meepits on.
So that's what we gotta do. Whoever wins, we're having Meepits on.
that's the prize. Yeah.
Meepits and Red Orlando together.
Yeah. I'm going to work on finding a signed vinyl copy of Enya's only album.
That's not bad. We could make a custom jersey for someone. Is another thought, because we all do that for each other because we're adorable. So.
Enya 69.
Yeah. Oh no. Welcome back to episode 43 of There Is No Offseason. I hope you used the break to get in touch with Meepits on Twitter and sign up for this very strange, very hilarious Tino Listeners League. Now that the email portion of our little weekly show is behind us, we will now move on to the portion of our little weekly show in which we talk about a list that Brett Sayer has made. This week, that list is the top 175 Dynasty starting pitchers. Lot of arms. So Brett, why don't you get us started, because I think we're going to be discussing them for just a little while, and here are the keys. You can use them to drive the thing that we're driving.
Thank you, Ben. We're not going to start at the very top of this list like we've been doing the last couple. I don't think anyone has anything particularly enlightening or different to say about Clayton Kershaw other than, he's good. So we're going to move down to the next tier immediately. What do you I guess we have Felix Hernandez and Max Scherzer, who are the next two names on this list. The guy that really the guy that jumps out to me as being particularly interesting, depending on how you still feel about his potential for injury, is Chris Sale. I could certainly see the argument for people leave him out of the top five, given that he, hasn't really thrown a ton, given how good he's been and the fact that he looks like he's going to break with every pitch. But would Chris Sale be in your top five, Craig?
Yes. And I believe we obviously did lists over at the Dynasty Guru, and he was in my top five. I think he misses about 3 to 5 starts a year, kind of on and off. But and I know that affects the innings totals, but the rate stats are so very good. And so I don't know. I like what he's able to do. At this point, the arm action is ugly to watch, but everything outside of that is really fantastic. And, he might come up as with a little tenderness here and there, but I don't know that we can argue against what's been working so far. And I don't know that his injury risk is as great as we thought it was relative to, just being a pitcher, being an injury risk in and of itself. So yes, he would be.
Cool. Does anyone that's pretty much my thought exactly. Does anyone disagree with Sale's position here?
I think it's fine. I don't remember exactly where I had him, but it's in this area. I'll just add that if Chris Sale gets hurt now and you're like, haha, I told you so, you're an asshole and you're already wrong because you thought he was going to break a long time ago.
Agreed.
Yep. Yeah, and you're also no fun. So yeah.
Indeed.
So let's go down to the 6-7 pairing, which I personally find endlessly fascinating. Jose Fernandez and Steven Strasburg, both guys have the natural talent to be, that number two guy behind Clayton Kershaw. Both have had Tommy John surgery. Who do you prefer if you were given a choice of these two right now in a start from scratch dynasty league? Ben,
can you say the two again? You broke up a tiny bit for me.
That would be Jose Fernandez and Steven Strasburg.
I am probably taking Strasburg. I still think there is a little bit of a higher level still left in the tank. Better team. I know Fernandez also has exceptional contextual factors, but Strasburg's contextual factors are really strong. I know he's older, but he also, we haven't seen Fernandez come back after that injury yet. I don't dock him a ton for it, but Strasburg is really good, and I think he's sort of unnecessarily docked in the minds of a lot because he didn't become Nolan Ryan 2.0. But yeah, it's close. I'd probably have them back to back or somewhere right around the same 3 to 4 groupings as well. But I would go Strasburg.
Okay. For the record, I have Fernandez at 6 and Strasburg at 7. They're very close. But does anyone would anyone take Fernandez over Strasburg other than me?
Nope.
Nope, you're on that island.
I am on that island. All right, so let's go.
Why don't you explain? Obviously, it's a splitting hairs a little bit, but why do you prefer Fernandez?
I prefer Fernandez just because I'm starting to lose a little faith that Strasburg puts it that Strasburg has a next gear. I think we saw Fernandez's next gear before he got hurt last year. And I think he's close enough to being back. He'll be back in a couple months into the season that I'm more comfortable with him, especially given the difference in age. That's a minor factor when it comes to, we'll talk about this as it goes through, but, age is a much more minor factor when it comes to starting pitchers than it is with position players in a dynasty league format. Just because pitchers are much more difficult to predict year to year than hitters are. But I think Fernandez just has a little bit more of that next gear and makes up for the difference.
Okay.
So let's go to the next tier. I think there are going to be some people who question Madison Bumgarner being outside of the top 10 on this list, especially given the sort of relative boringness of some of the guys in front of him. But I guess I want to lead that into a question about the guys in front of him. How how do we, I mean, there's been news on both of them recently. I mean, Cole Hamels, because he may or may not get traded, and Zach Greinke, because he may or may not have an ouchy elbow. But would any of you take either of them over Madison Bumgarner? And if not, is Bumgarner an elite fantasy starter based just on one postseason?
I think that sort of sells short what he's been. I don't think he's as good as he was during the postseason, of course, but I think that makes it seem like he's just a so-so fantasy asset, and he was the 9th best fantasy starter last year. That was ahead of Greinke and well ahead of Hamels. Obviously, Hamels had missed time with an injury, so probably not fair to dock Hamels to that extent, but I mean, Bumgarner was disgusting last year and was just as good almost in 2013, so I don't think the fact that I want him higher has anything to do with his postseason. I just think that he's younger and elite and in an incredible home ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say he's also 6 years younger. Like, that's not a small amount younger. I mean, I to your point about the pitchers, that's a fair point to make, but 6 years is substantial when you're looking at a dynasty format. And I couldn't agree more with what Ben said in terms of selling him short on what he's doing. I mean, he's a 25% strikeout guy and a sub-3 ERA guy the last 2 years. And he throws 200 plus innings. There's a lot of value in that. Greinke, as much as I love him, he was a 20% strikeout guy in 2013. He did hit 25% last year, but he's also not sure to be a 200 inning guy. And I say that even though I'm going to say that he doesn't have an ouchy elbow. He's gotten these injections in his elbow during the spring the last 3 years, and it's just to avoid a dead arm period. Or I guess I should say, if he has an ouchy elbow, he has it every year, and it's planned for. And like, this is scheduled, so it's not in response to pain. It's a preventative move.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. That's probably the only guy I would take. I would probably take Bumgarner over Greinke. I think it's fair where you placed him. I do have him behind Cole Hamels as well, but yeah, I mean, Ben summed it up pretty nice, and I. You know, just me personally, I'd probably go Bumgarner. Hamels, Bumgarner, then Greinke.
Yeah, I don't want to make it seem like I dislike Bumgarner. I think of him as a very, very, very good fantasy starter. I don't think of him as an elite fantasy starter.
I would put him behind Strasburg ahead of David Price in a dynasty list.
That kind of looks right to me.
Yeah, I don't think that is an uncommon opinion. I think mine's the more uncommon opinion. But I mean, we're also talking a matter of, you know, three spots.
Yeah. Right. Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, we're splitting hairs, but that's kind of what you do at this high.
Exactly. And that's the whole fun of talking about it. I mean, the difference between David Price and Jordan Zimmermann, but from 8 to 13, is not very large.
right.
All right, so let's go to another thing that might make me unpopular, maybe less unpopular among this group, but I'm not sure. I have Gerrit Cole ahead of Corey Kluber. Cole at 14, Kluber at 15. This is not so much a knock on Kluber as it is a strong belief in Gerrit Cole. On a scale of 1 to 10, Craig, how crazy am I?
I'd say on a scale of 1 to 10, you're 10, but I'd say this move qualifies specifically as, I don't know. I'd say six or seven. I mean, I don't think it's a reasonable ranking for the next 2 years, maybe three. I mean, I get that you think Gerrit Cole has maybe that gear that you fear Strasburg doesn't, and that's coming. I think he does have a ways to, like, even if he finds another gear, my fear would be that even if he finds another gear, he still might not be as good as Corey Kluber. And that would be the bulk of my giving you a crazy, you know, like a 6 or a 7 on the crazy scale. I love Gerrit Cole, but he's kind of always been a little weird with his peripherals, right? He's always had the stuff to be to do something, you know, more than he's done in terms of missing bats. Now, I say that as he was a 25% strikeout guy last year, or 24. But, you know, I don't think he's going to have a season that it looked like Jose Fernandez was having, or that, you know, someone like Clayton Kershaw has, where they're up over 30%. I think he can be, you know, a 220 inning, you know, 23 to 25% strikeout guy, which is immensely valuable. But Kluber, you know, I don't know that Cole ever has a season like Kluber just had.
Well, I guess then the question is, do you think Kluber ever again has a season like Kluber just had?
Probably not, but I guess the idea is that he's at a point where, like, if he backslides, you know, something like 8% in terms of production, like, Cole still has to make a jump just to reach that, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And so that would be my concern again. And it's this is where age comes into it again, because Kluber is already going to be 29 for this season. So I'm comfortable with Hamels being, or Hamels, you talk about Cole enough, you're going to get to Hamels. With Cole being, you know, around Kluber, I couldn't justify putting him ahead.
Fair enough. Anyone else want to jump in before we move on that particular one?
No, I love Gerrit Cole. I think as a whole, this podcast is very high on Cole, but I'd probably even have him maybe between Lester and Cueto. I think a lot of what you guys said mm-hmm. holds true for me in terms of it's great to forecast that he's going to get to that goal, that next level, but, you know, when is he going to do that? He is already 25, I believe. That's not old, obviously, but you know, if he doesn't hit it until he's 27 or 28, I love him. So dropping him, you know, 2 or 3 spots is a little painful for me, but I would be taking Kluber and Lester first.
Well, and the question I would ask is if he remains what he is, like if we knew he was going to be the 2014 Gerrit Cole in perpetuity, where would he rank?
Probably around what, Sonny Gray?
No, I think he would, given his age and what that season looked like, I think he would still be in the top 20.
Well, okay. So
I think he'd be like at 20. I think he'd be right in between Teron and Arrieta.
So, I mean, I guess the question is how big of an improvement does he have to make going forward, and how long does he have to sustain it to be, I mean, 6 spots is not insubstantial.
Here. No, it's not.
So, it's a relatively major jump that you're talking about.
Yeah, and to your point,
and then sustaining it to some degree. Right? I'm not disagreeing. I'm just making clear like the level of faith that you're talking about.
And if he stays who he is, I think top 20 is aggressive. He was 66th best starter last year. Yes, that's in 140 innings, so that's going to skyrocket if he throws 200 like we all think he can. But that's still really probably
I don't know if it only puts him on the exactly.
I don't know if you're gonna like really.
He would jump spots for dependability, obviously, in this scenario, right? Because you know what you're getting, and that's bankable. But still,
I mean, I guess the only thing that I'm going to say here is that, like, you know, if you're going to pick a guy to make that jump and to make those improvements, I think that's Gerrit Cole. Like, I don't really disagree all that much with where Brett has him. Like, I mean, I understand that there's got to be a substantial increase in statistical output. Like, I get that. And I'm not discounting that, and I'm not discounting that it's substantial, but I think the faith isn't misplaced with putting Gerrit Cole where he is. Like, I don't think it's that insane. I'd probably put you at a 4. You know, it's risky and it's bold, right? But I don't think it's insane. And I think you can do that.
All right. So that we don't talk about Gerrit Cole for a full hour, let's move on. Let's just kind of go down into this next kind of large tier here of, you know, 15 guys or so. There are a couple of interesting, you know, guys that sit next to each other. Some that have different risk propositions. The two guys that jump out to me here that one seems to be a lot safer and one seems to be a lot more of a risk right now are the guys 24 and 25, which is Masahiro Tanaka and Sonny Gray. Now Gray is probably not the world's most reliable guy, as he's still, you know, he's still young and he doesn't have the largest track record, but you know, obviously Tanaka flashed the kind of greatness that Gray has not really shown for an extended period of time, although his future is a bit clouded with the elbow situation. Craig, what do you make of Tanaka and of Gray, and where are you on both of them right now?
I think I'm a high person on Tanaka. There's obviously a lot of concern about the elbow. But as you discussed, Gray isn't without those concerns too. It bums me out to kind of be the hesitant guy on Gray, because I liked him. I mean, I liked him back when he was with Vanderbilt, and I was never that concerned about his height. Obviously, he fits into my mold of shorter guys who throw hard, and so I have a preference for those guys. But I do think the fantasy community is a little aggressive with him. Just because, I mean, he had a great season. 219 innings with a 3.08 ERA is fantastic. But he also, I mean, he's not the swing and miss guy he was in his shorter season with the A's in 2013, when he only had 64 innings. I think the league adjusted a little bit. Obviously, not that successfully if he's putting up a 3.08 ERA. But in terms of swings and misses, which is a huge component, obviously, in fantasy. So I guess I think he's more of a compiler than he is like a rate wizard in that kind of sense. Whereas I think Tanaka can definitely support a 25%+ strikeout rate over a full season. I mean, that's obviously not been proven. He only threw 136 innings, but I really do think he could do that. And I think obviously the health is why he's at 24. I mean, if Tanaka is healthy, I think there's an argument to put him, you know, with Jordan Zimmermann and Madison Bumgarner and those guys. And obviously that's a big if, but that's also a big jump. And so I would probably want to be a little more aggressive with Tanaka. I'd probably have him inside my top 20, because even if he does miss a year, I think he could come back and still be the same kind of guy.
Sounds good. So does anyone else want to jump in on that one before we move on? Sounds good.
Don't all jump in at once.
So there are a lot of interesting names to talk about on this list. We're not going to talk about all of them. I want to talk in general about where prospects sit on this list, and whether this feels right to everybody. There are a lot of other lists where prospects crack, prospects crack the top 10. Prospects, you know, sometimes crack the top 5. There's no pitching prospect in the top 30 of this list. The highest guy here is Noah Syndergaard at 31. So Ben, does that feel about right to you to start putting the prospects, or would you skew them slightly earlier or later in general?
It looks pretty perfect for me. Sorry for the lame answer. I think I'd probably have these guys two spots higher behind Gausman and ahead of Samardzija, and I happen to have them flipped in my personal top 100, but it's right around the right area. I think that's the smart way to play it with pitching prospects.
All right. Then let's jump into this next group, because the next group starts out with three really, really interesting names up top. And we can kind of go around. I'll kind of have each of you guys talk about one of them. Craig, how much should we believe in Garrett Richards, and what do we think we should expect from him when he's healthy from his knee injury?
Oh, this is cruel, because I mention him as someone to talk about because I wanted. I don't really know what to do with him. He was obviously really good this season, and until he had his knee injury. That being said, as much as we're like, oh, it's a knee injury and it's not an arm injury, and that's good. Garrett Richards is a big dude, and so anything that's going to affect his knees could be a long term problem. And on top of that, he was kind of a pop up guy. Obviously, we knew he could throw really hard, but the secondary is really developed in an at least unexpected pace, if not an unexpected way. And the success, I think, was legitimate in terms of how he looked and how his pitches were executed and all of that. But I also don't know – I'm not sure if he was going to be able to repeat that type of execution, if that makes sense. Like, I don't want to say, like, he outperformed his peripherals or that type of stuff. He was very good all the way around. I just don't know that he's that good, again, as a pitcher, much less his stats. So that's kind of my concerns with him, and I don't know what to do with that. Maybe you guys can chime in on it.
Yeah, I mean, those are all very fair points. I think, you know, you get Richards and Jake Arrieta sort of are an interesting place, and so is a guy who we'll get to in a couple of names. But Arrieta is a guy who I personally believe more in the repeatability of the talent. Richards is someone who certainly came on strong. You're absolutely right. He came on stronger than I think we thought he was going to, but he has always had the velocity, and he does pitch in that park. I think Richards is a very solid pitcher, but I think this is about where he tops out. I don't see him having the kind of season in 2015 that would cement him as a top 20 name in dynasty leagues. Even though, you know, obviously another season like 2014 and he'd have to be in the conversation. I just think he's a tick behind that, and I think he steps back slightly, but still is good enough to be, you know, a usable second starter and a pretty good third starter. So let's keep going through these names. So Ben, where do we go with Marcus Stroman from here? He's a guy who a lot of people really, really like. You know, Craig talks about the fantasy community being high in general on Sonny Gray. I think the fantasy community is very high in general on Marcus Stroman, and there are certainly reasons why it's warranted. But how personally high on Stroman are you, and what are you expecting from him?
So I think you hit the nail on the head. For a dynasty league ranking, I don't really mind this. It's still maybe a little high. In terms of particularly 2015, I think he's being overdrafted. Not hugely, but by a fair amount. I'm looking at Fantasy Pros ADP right now, and he's at 43, which doesn't sound crazy, but that's ahead of Andrew Cashner, Matt Latos, Chris Archer, Jose Quintana, guys you could all easily argue should be ahead of him. In the long run, I like him, but I mean, I think he's probably a number three fantasy starter, especially in Toronto, and that's very valuable. I'm not concerned about him needing to move to the bullpen. I've been in on him as a starter pretty much since he was drafted. I was really pissed when he went right before the Red Sox had the chance to take him. So I like him a lot. I think the hype is warranted, but I do think that people aren't understanding that it's probably going to take him a little while to hit maturity, and what you're likely to get in the near term is probably more along the lines of a number 4-5 fantasy starter than it is a number 2-3 fantasy starter.
All right, so let's move to the third of this group here. Mal, what do we do with Jacob DeGrom? He's, you know, obviously he's a guy who was never highly heralded as a prospect, and then came up and did things that even the biggest Jacob DeGrom supporters would not have anticipated. So where do we go from here on him?
I think we're going to have a lot of people out there who are going to say that there's going to be some regression with Jacob deGrom, and yeah, I mean, no shit. Threw one out there and threw a 2.69 ERA over the course of 140 innings. But, I mean, I think when you start digging a little bit deeper into what he did last year and kind of what he really refined, and that's, you know, fastball command. So he's a fastball sinker slider guy and really worked on locating the fastball quite a bit, you know, in 2014. It's something that I think portends well to what his future projection is going to be. Is he going to be 2014 Jacob deGrom? No, but I think he's going to be a good SP3. And I mean, I think he's, you know, might even inch up into the SP2 territory, you know, back end of that. So I mean, you know, it's, yeah, he's earned my respect, and he's absolutely earned my faith in that. You know, I think he's going to be able to make the adjustments, and I think he's a smart enough pitcher to use his stuff and you know, really, it's because the other thing with him is that he's got very repeatable mechanics, and it really helps out a lot with command. So when you're moving around the fastball like he did, and you know, it's just being really smart with your plan of attack. I think you're going to last in the league, and I think he can make the adjustments and be a good pitcher moving forward.
Sounds good. So we've now spent almost a half hour talking about the first 35 names on this list. This is a very, very long list. There's another 140 guys on here. So we're going to stop going through the list at this point. So let's just kind of – are there any guys on this list that any of you want to hit on personally before we wrap things up here?
Yeah, I mean, I'll hit on Jake Odorizzi. You know, he's kind of an enigma in that I don't think we were ever, you know, he kind of showed up with a strikeout rate that was out of this world, and I don't think any of us were really expecting that, but I think he's a pretty good profile of something that maybe you should start I think we all should start paying attention to, and that's, you know, you can learn a changeup whenever, and that's pretty much what Odorizzi did. He came in and learned a split finger with the Rays and really helped out with what he did in 2014, so... You know, when you're talking about pitchers who have, you know, good breaking stuff and a solid fastball and are missing a changeup, I think you're going to be able to do a little bit better with that. And those are the types of guys who can surprise you in a positive way. So that's me on Odorizzi.
Anyone else?
I guess I think it's interesting, the two guys that I'll touch on. I think that you have Shelby Miller at 40 and Chris Archer at 53. And granted, it's a little bit further down the list, so 13 spots isn't necessarily a major difference. But I guess I think it's interesting given the year that Miller just had. I know he was better in the second half. He still struggled substantially with missing bats kind of on the whole. And, I mean, as good as he was in 2013, I don't think it was – significantly better than Archer's 2014. And so I guess I was wondering where the difference comes in on that. Is it, I mean, I don't know. I think of them as similar players. So again, while 13 spots isn't that big a difference, it seemed somewhat substantive to me.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it seems more substantive than it really is. But, you know, with... When I think of Miller and Archer, it comes down to two relatively mild things. I think Miller misses more bats going forward. I think he certainly struggled with that in 2014, but I think that he, you know, barring something that is wrong with him that I don't know about, that I don't think is the case, but obviously we never know. I think he's going to have the better strikeout rate going forward, and I think the fact that he's in the National League is going to help him. I mean, Archer is certainly good enough to succeed in the American League. He's put up good numbers. I am concerned that we've, as much as I do like Archer, I'm concerned that we've seen his best season now, and that he's, you know, not really that, you know, borderline, you know, SP2, SP3 type that he was hinting at in 2014.
Well, could That's an interesting statement to me, because I guess what makes you think that? I mean, he had a rough April and a bad May, but he was pretty good from that point on. I mean, it's not like he got worse as the year went on. People figured him out.
No, I completely agree. It's really more personal preference with Miller than I think it is with anything else.
I meant to isolate Archer in terms of, like you said, you thought 2014 might have been his best season. And I guess I was wondering what made that. I didn't know if something like tipped you off to that maybe I'm not seeing or something like that.
No, I just I have a little bit of concern about the walk rate, even though he's, you know, it's obviously better than I think people thought it was going to be when he was coming up through the minors. And, you know, what I expected to see from Archer, which we haven't seen in either season, is we saw it in 2013. I expected either he would take a little bit of a step forward and lose a little bit of the swing and miss in order to gain in command and control and lower the whip, or he would elevate the strikeouts and, you know, and kind of whip be damned. But he had a 1.28 whip in 2014, and I don't know I don't know how much better we can. I mean, I think it can be a little bit better, but I don't know how much better we can reasonably expect it to be. I think the 1.13 from 2013 is a little fluky. I just don't see him getting back to that walk rate.
Okay. That's fine with me. The only thing to me is that if I'm expanding it back out, is that Miller was in a similar boat in terms of his. I mean, his walk rate was actually worse than Archer's. But again, I understand that, and I'll let someone else have the floor.
I want to talk about a different Ray, which is not something I say often, but talk about raking Matt Moore at 58. How challenging was he for you to rank?
He's almost impossible to rank. I still think that Matt Moore can be a very good fantasy starter, and I think he can. I believe in his ability to miss bats at the major league level, but when looking back at the list after I put it together, it feels like an aggressive ranking based on where he is right now. But I still think it's a reasonable approximation of his talent. I mean, how old is Moore? Do you guys know off the top of your head? Is he 25?
That sounds right. He is Fangraphs load slowly. He is
25.251.
Yeah. Okay. So he'll be 26 this summer. The stuff just draws me back. It's going to keep doing that until he fully convinces me to stop. I mean, he's missed bats. He's struck out 339 batters in 347 career innings, and you know he's certainly got a problem with the walks. But with his strikeout rate and the amount that he limits hits when he's on, you know, it's not a complete sinker for his whip. So. He's not one of those guys that you feel great about ranking anywhere, but I guess there's as good a place as any.
In next year's list, who do you think is going to end up being ranked higher, Tuki Toussaint or Alexander Reyes?
Toussaint. I think Reyes is a little bit of a. Reyes is a little bit of a longer burn. I think Toussaint could come out and be really, really good in full season ball when he gets there. I don't know if he's going to get there at the beginning of the season, whether he'll break there later in the year. But Reyes, I think, is going to. I think he's going to continue to struggle with the control, and he certainly has all the talent in the world if he figures that out. But I'm really, really big on what Toussaint could do this year.
I'll bring up I want to talk about Josh Johnson and if your ranking of him was actually just a joke because he actually won't throw any pitches.
He may not throw any pitches, but it's not a joke.
Okay.
I'm always prepared for Josh Johnson to throw at least one pitch.
You're more prepared than he is.
Yeah, probably. He's behind Jaime Garcia.
That's good.
You're taking Jaime Garcia to Edwin Jacksonian levels.
I'm going down with that one. I still love Garcia.
I feel like he was your first love.
He was. I so wish he could stay healthy. He's just awesome. But he's actually, unlike Edwin Jackson, he's actually legitimately good when he pitches. He just doesn't pitch nearly as often as he should.
Absolutely true. How could you rank staff ace Kyle Hendricks, the next Greg Maddux, as low as you did?
I thought that was a pretty good ranking for him.
It makes me sick. Makes me sick. Absolutely sick.
Yeah, I do that to people.
I keep forgetting Jake Peavy's real still. Just scrolling through the bottom, and he's just hanging out. Hanging out at 151.
All right.
Can we stop?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Okay.
Yeah, we can stop.
I tricked you because now we have to do current events. And guess who the one pitcher we haven't talked about yet is?
Oh, no.
James Shields. James Shields is a Padre now. And that means we have to say that this is a good thing because he's in Petco. Does anyone else have James Shields thoughts?
No, that's a pretty good one.
Thank you. I've been working on it since you sent this list over. Really wanted to stick the landing.
I think you did.
Appreciate it. Now we can actually talk about Moncada. That's good. Signed with the Red Sox. Don't know if you heard. That's pretty cool. It's a good team to sign with. Strong recommend for any of you other Cuban phenoms out there listening to Tino. Sign with the Red Sox. It's a good call. Brett, I believe you said he'd be number 8 on your Dynasty top prospects list. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correect. Which is, if you're listening to this, I don't know when this is going to come out, but the Dynasty 101 is going to come out at BP this week. So that's super fun.
What a tease.
I would be excited if I wasn't sick of everything that we've done at this point. I'm just tired of it all.
You sound so happy. So happy.
That's how you push product, Craig. Atta boy.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah. But yes, number 8, that's where he would be.
Cool. You don't think we'll get a few more questions about Moncada in the following weeks, do you?
Probably not. I think people are over it.
You know what's sad is it's probably kind of true now that he's signed. It's like all the majesty's gone.
Yeah.
You know, Enya can sympathize with that. Welcome back to episode 43 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Once again, Craig, Mao, and I are venturing to Arizona for spring training in the middle of March, but this time, Dad's coming with us. That means it's up to you to brand the latest Tino Hits Arizona edition with a hashtag of your choosing. The person who picks the best hashtag for us will win something, probably not. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We are approaching 60 reviews, and it would be great to get there fairly soon. As you can tell, I forgot to change this outro from whenever we last recorded. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com and like our Facebook page at Tino Podcast. You can find Brett at Dynasty Guru on Twitter, Mauricio at mrubio52, Craig at CD, that's CD as in CD doppelganger Goldstein, and you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
Can I ask you about this tweet about email and DM on Twitter. What happened?
I got an email from Allison Sayer, and the subject line is "Pricey at Greenhouse?" Question mark, and there's no box.
To be fair, Allison.
Right, remember when you wanted to start this early? I do.
I'm ready to go whenever you are.
Well, you said you wanted to finish this.
Yeah, that's exactly what you said word for word.
You said that out loud.
I can put myself on mute and we can start.
Oh. Well, how close are you now?
No, I don't trust that.
No, I'm
at 163.
Oh, just finish. Just finish and wake us up when you're done.
Vincent Velasquez.
I'm going to close my eyes. You just let me know.